Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Thank you for joining us yet again. We appreciate you all so much.
Yes.
Just a little heads up, we're still figuring out our recording software. So the last few episodes in this one have been recorded on a phone app that makes it difficult to edit. So here we are.
Yeah. My daughter actually said, Mom, you guys are recording in a car on a phone? That's so unprofessional. And I said, hey, we're not professional yet.
Hey, we're not getting paid. There's nothing professional
right.
about it.
So you know what? You get what you get.
Yeah. This is what it's like when you have two women just stumbling through a hobby.
Exactly. So yeah, we're hoping next week maybe we have...
I mean, we'll see.
And if not, then this works at least for now.
For now.
So, yeah.
We'll figure something out one of these days.
Yeah.
If anyone has suggestions.
Oh, yes,
we've
please.
Tried Audacity. We have to do it a weird way because we have Acer Chromebooks right now. Mm. So then we have to put Linux on there. But then it's an outdated version of Audacity. That is what we started with. And so, yeah, if anyone has suggestions for anything that's good for
And if
Google
it,
Chrome.
Yeah,
Acers.
If it happens to not be internet based or something that we could actually just like download to our
computer
would be amazing. Last week we recorded it and it just kept airing out. I mean,
yeah,
consistently.
Yeah.
And we both had strong internet connections, so don't know what the deal is. I mean, you probably don't even care to know all of these things. Some of you will, the tech nerds, right?
Right. I don't know. I mean, maybe there was some sort of user error. Maybe it was just that we tried a different internet-based
software.
Error,
maybe.
Yeah. Because it was nice that it had the option that we could record remotely from our own homes if we ever need to. Because sometimes finding the time gets tricky.
Mm-hmm.
This is currently after my children have gone to bed and I drove over to Shannon's.
Mm-hmm. Last week we did it 10 p.m. When it was supposed to be released at midnight, so 2 hours before, right?
Well,
it was
recorded.
Like
yeah, we recorded. We actually started recording probably around 8:30 or so. By the time I got done and home, it was 10 o'clock for me to get everything uploaded and the stuff typed up for the information.
Yeah,
you know, it was fine. We had 2 hours to spare. I mean,
I work better under pressure sometimes, so.
It was like probably, okay, it was loaded by like 10:30. I had an hour and a half. There was a brief moment. I was like, do I just hit publish now? It's an hour and a half.
I know. Yeah.
But I was like, no, because then there's the other part of me. It's like, no, everything has to be the same.
Yes, because then it'll say it came out Tuesday, and then it's just going to be confusing.
No, we're not a Tuesday podcast. We're a Wednesday
OCD
podcast.
Just needs it to be.
It has to be at a certain time. So.
Right. So, yeah, there's that. And with that, too, okay, so I know we have mentioned the news, interview story that we did almost a month ago now, and we actually got confirmation that she said the date as of now April 19th.
Yes.
Is that a Monday?
I think it's a Tuesday.
A Tuesday, yes, because yeah, okay. So they said that tentatively will be the 19th.
At 10 p.m. So
yeah.
For our local Omaha people, that's the KETV Channel 7. Will be airing this story. It's not just us. They also talked to, I want to say it was a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
One of the two.
A professional about, you know, why we as people are so into true crime and stuff. So I'm very interested to see that part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll post things, you know, again to our socials as we know them.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, all we really know as of now for that. But we wanted you to know that it is coming, and we are just as excited to see it and hear it.
I'm excited for it.
I just hope that the doctor isn't going to be like, yeah, anyone who does that, it's like, you have issues. There's a little bit of like homicidal tendencies.
When I first started seeing my therapist and I told her it was a true crime podcast that helped me actually even get like help for myself for my anxiety and depression, and that's what I listened to calm my anxiety, she didn't judge.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, they're not supposed to, but she wasn't like, oh, let's work on that.
Yeah.
She was like, hey, that's awesome. So, I mean, I think
yeah.
I think if my therapist,
you know, and Yeah, if your therapist's okay to... Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there. I was just thinking, today I was reading a thing about true crime and it gave reasons as to why, like, what is your reason for liking it? And it was like, because they're real stories about real people, to see why people do the things they do, you know, like different reasons like that. And I was like, oh, you normalize it, like, by saying that, you know?
Yeah.
And it is interesting because it is true, real things that happen to real people.
Well, like I've said before, like, there's a part of me that feels like the more I read about it, the more knowledge I have about signs to look for. And whether or not, like, not all of these things had signs. Some of them are random things, mm-hmm. you know. But, I don't know. It's like, the more you know, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Okay, so I'm excited. Because I have no idea what your story is even about.
You know, and I realized as I was driving over here that there's not necessarily... There's a few different Iowa towns mentioned. So we're going to Iowa.
That's right. I couldn't even remember what state. Okay.
Before we get started, I am going to give a trigger warning.
Okay.
A few of them. So there is a trigger warning for talk of suicide, self-harm, sexual abuse of a child, and abuse of children.
Mm.
So if any of those things are hard for you to listen to, maybe this week you don't want to listen to our episode. Mental health and kind of those things are a big part of this week's episode. So I wanted to really make sure I stress that before we go into the story.
Okay.
So
thanks for that. Yeah. Sometimes it's like you hear something and you're like, well, now I'm so far into it that I don't want to.
Well, and I don't want to accidentally, you know, someone who's had any sort of experience with those things, I don't want to trigger it. Nothing goes into detail. I don't do graphic details on any of the things. But still, I want to give that warning. If this episode isn't for you, completely understand. We'll see you next week. We still love you.
Yes.
So, you know, we appreciate that support. But like I said, stressing this episode is about mental health. And so I just really wanted to make sure that anyone who this might affect them, we let them know right off the bat.
Yeah.
I don't want to trigger someone unnecessarily. So
100%.
So with that being said,
okay.
This week's episode, I am going to tell a little differently. You know, normally we try to focus on the victims and their backgrounds more than the murderers, but because of how this story is, I think knowing the background of the perpetrator is really important, actually, to this one.
Especially if it's a mental health thing.
Yes.
I can see that.
Yes. So, and it's kind of weird, there was actually a different story that revolved around mental health, kind of the lack of mental health care in Iowa, to focus on that, but I didn't get the details, as we've said before, that I wanted. So I do want to come back to that story eventually.
Okay.
But since I couldn't get the details I wanted, I was just looking for a case and I came across this one. And it just so happened to actually be another mental health related one.
It was meant to be then.
It was. So, yeah, that's where, like I said, we're getting into this now. So the actual murder and attack took place on October 26, 2008, right outside of Littleton, Iowa. It was near this place called Hook and Liner Pond. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm saying it how it's spelled. So,
okay.
Sorry if that's said a different way, but like I said, it's right outside of Littleton, Iowa. So we'll just kind of say it took place in Littleton, Iowa. But before we get to that, like I said, we're going to talk about Michelle Kehoe. K-E-H-O-E. Kehoe?
K-E-H-O-E?
K-E-H-O-E.
Kehoe.
We're going to call her Michelle forward.
Michelle's probably fine.
And she is the woman who carried out these attacks and murder.
Oh, gosh.
So, Michelle was born on March 27th, 1973 in Sumner, Iowa. Like I said, we're going to hear a lot of Iowa towns in this. To Marilyn and Stan Peters. They were 21 and 22 respectively, and they were both known partiers. I mean, drinking. They called it, I read this book. It was something about, I'll link to it, but honestly, it wasn't a great book. It had a lot of information, but it was very repetitive. It was a journalist who wrote and independently published this, and it needed editing hardcore, so it drug out a bit. I did get good information from it, but I can't say that it was a well-written book.
Okay. And that's the one you got off Amazon? Is that the one you were talking
about?
Okay.
Yeah. So I will link to that.
Cool.
But in it, they talked about how, like, they took pills and stuff like that. Something they said, like, they were uppers, and, like, at the time, they were called beaners, which sounds weird to me. I'm just gonna call them uppers if they come up in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, after Michelle was born, Stan started to realize that, like, he couldn't party all night and then go and work. He worked for, like, John Deere.
Okay, yeah.
And he kind of realized that, like, if he wanted to keep that job, he couldn't go out partying all the time. But Marilyn had no problem still doing that. So, of course, she had a hard time keeping a job. And eventually, it became apparent she was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan decided that he couldn't handle that anymore, and so he filed for divorce, and he applied for sole custody of Michelle when she was 3. Mm-hmm. Now, it took until she was 5 for the divorce to be finalized, and Stan was actually the first father in Iowa to be granted sole custody of a daughter.
Wow, that is pretty... When was this?
This would have been in, like, 1978. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's really crazy. Yeah. Even back then. Okay.
Yeah. Michelle's the daughter. Marilyn, the mom, she couldn't keep a job. Her drinking.
That's true. Yeah.
It was just so bad. So that led to Stan getting custody. So then they moved to Denver, Iowa.
Oh my gosh, all these towns. Did they copy Colorado? Which was their first, I guess.
I have
maybe
no
these
clue.
Were here, you know?
But that's where Stan's mom lived and a lot of his extended family and stuff. So he moved there so his mom could help out with Michelle as he worked. And by all accounts, Michelle was really close with her grandmother. And like I said, there was extended families there, like aunts, uncles, cousins, and she flourished there. She had a stable home, stable environment, people who loved her, and she was happy. Unfortunately, that would change on July 2nd of 1979. Stan and his friend, Dennis Goring, set out for a fishing trip to Canada. They stopped in Duluth, Minnesota, which is a weird coincidence that I covered that.
I saw that today somewhere, that name too.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
But here, Dennis suggested that they stop for the night and sleep in the car, because apparently it was pretty well known that Stan fell asleep easily while driving. And I'm like, if this is something you know, why is he driving to begin with?
Yeah. That's alarming.
Yep, so Stan insisted that he could still make their destination that night. Like, he was going to make it all the way to Canada that night.
Nope.
Yep. And he said he took some uppers, so he was good to go. And Dennis was just like, okay, cool.
Why did Dennis not drive?
This is where the weird writing comes in. It said that he had offered at one point, but Stan insisted on driving, and then I think Dennis at this point was tired, so he was just kind of like, whatever, because it's later at night now.
And if he's volunteering, I guess, and he's like, I'm good.
Yeah. So Dennis is like, all right, fine. He gives in, and he decides he's going to, because this is like 9:30, 10 o'clock or so, I think. Mm-hmm. So he decides that he's going to take a nap. And then around 10:30 p.m., he's awoken to their vehicle colliding with a pickup that was towing a camper. Because we're out in, like, country. People are camping. It's summer.
Yeah.
And, of course, neither of the men were wearing seatbelts. So, I mean, it's late 70s.
Right. That's, yeah.
Uh-huh. That they makes sense. Were super lucky because 2 paramedics actually happened to be following behind them. And they were able to help immediately. So, they were both transferred to Duluth Hospital. And, unfortunately, Stan did die of his injuries there. It didn't say in the book what his injuries were, but, I mean,
I'm surprised they didn't die at the scene if they were, like, ejected.
But... yeah. I think he maybe lived for, like, a day or so.
Wow.
On machines, and then, yeah, I don't think he made it. Dennis did live, but he had a broken jaw and internal injuries, and it took him over a year to recover from all that. But, I mean, he's lucky to even be alive.
And really, a year's not that bad when you think about
the reality of what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know what kind of car they were driving. Maybe it said and I missed it. But, so, I mean, that goes a long way, too. Like, were they driving a truck?
Right.
Were they driving a car?
It makes a difference.
It's hard to say. Yeah. And so then, despite family members on Stan's side petitioning for custody of Michelle, she was sent back to her alcoholic mother, Marilyn, which I'm very surprised about, because it's like, the court gave custody to her father for right. a reason.
Yeah. And especially if there's all that other family there.
Yeah.
And she still was young enough that she, it's not like she could probably speak for herself. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's six at this point. So her mom had gotten remarried to a man named Richard Harvey in July of 78. So they were living back in Sumner, Iowa. And by all accounts, both of them had drinking problems. So it made them difficult to keep a steady job or have a steady income. And when Michelle moved in with them, they were actually living in like a small one-bedroom apartment. So her bed was placed beside their bed in this tiny place. And this, unfortunately, is when Michelle alleges that her stepfather began to sexually assault her.
That's where I was afraid this was going. Yeah. Right? When you said
and
that.
And she was six. And now, for those of you, like, the only reason why I say allegedly is because there was never, like, police report filed, court, anything like that. So, like...
No physical proof. Or,
well, there was never any... You can't say someone sexually assault... Well, you can, but, like, you're supposed... For these things, you have to say allegedly because there was never actually a conviction.
Right.
So, it's her word. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So, I'm not saying I don't believe her.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
But
just for the sake of
just like, for the sake of
the right way.
Of, yes. Yeah. So obviously she went from having a very stable, loving home to the exact opposite. They were constantly moving to avoid late bills and debt collectors. And she named all the places they moved back and forth. I don't know. Listen, I'm not going to name all the places. They jumped around a lot because then they'd come back to Sumner. Yeah. And so, you know, Michelle learned pretty early on that she had to fend for herself. So she'd get herself up and ready for school every day, make her own meals and stuff, because her mom was often still sleeping off the bender from the night before.
So if he was sexually assaulting her, too, where was the mom? I mean,
out
do you think she was,
probably.
Yeah, I was going to say not around or just really maybe didn't even care, you think?
I mean, so we'll kind of come into this on whether or not, eventually Michelle, we'll come to this, but Michelle does eventually confront and tell her mom. I mean, with as much as Michelle went out, I don't think Michelle and Richard were going out together.
Yeah.
It sounds like they had a very volatile relationship. They fought a lot. They fought and they drank. And, like, that's what they did.
Yeah.
So,
probably ever passed out. Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, there's any number of things. I think there was mention in there of, like, Marilyn maybe, like, sleeping around with people, you know, even when she was married to Stan and stuff. So, Marilyn's more focused, I think, on this point on her own wants and needs. So, and then it turns out, like, Michelle loved school, though, and she was actually really gifted academically, which later on I'll kind of discuss, like, they tell us, like, what her actual IQ was, but school was also her sanctuary from the chaos of her home life.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I
you know.
It's like that for a lot of kids, unfortunately, but.
Exactly. So, and then, I mean, that made it difficult, though, too, is, like, constantly changing schools because they're changing towns. So, I mean,
that's hard. Making friends.
And, but at some point, Michelle's mom and stepdad opened up an auto body shop, and I want to say this was in Sumner, called R&M Auto, which a lot of people think they used the money Michelle had been receiving from her dad's death benefits to open this place. Like, Michelle probably wasn't seeing any of this money. This was probably going to feed their addictions and then to open up this shop because neither one of them could keep jobs.
Right.
So they did run it for around 4 years, but then when Michelle was about 12, they had to close it. I think it was doing poorly at this point. And so they moved to Lawson, Missouri, where Richard had family. Like I said, because they had to close the shop, so I guess they decided to move to his family. And so, when Michelle was 13, she finally told her mom about the sexual abuse. And her mom said that she did not know who to believe, so she sent Michelle to live with her younger sister and her husband in Sumner, Iowa. I forgot to write down. But
that's all right.
Michelle would spend the rest of her school days there, like, she got that stable home and environment and things like that, but she did also suffer from a sense of abandonment from her mother. She felt like she was being punished for telling her mom.
Like sending her away instead of
Leaving him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that anger and resentment and sense of abandonment, definitely a big part, comes into play a lot later on. So, like I said, Michelle was really gifted academically. She had a tested IQ of 122, which I don't know the scores of these things, but they said it is in the 93rd percentile. Oh. So then she attended the University of Iowa. I think she got her bachelor's. She was getting her bachelor's, and she was interested in doing physical therapy. So
you can make a lot of money with that.
Yeah. So then in 1992, which this is one of the things where I first really was like, you really needed an editor. Because out of nowhere, it was like in 2003. And I was like, wait.
Did I miss
what?
Some years?
And it
What's
said
happening?
2003 several times. Oh. And then it came back and said like 96. And I was like, I'm sorry. What? And then that's when I realized.
That was me last week. Like, wait, what year are we in now?
Yeah. You know, so I realized that was the author mistyping several times. So in 1992... while attending college, she meets Jean Kehoe. So, Jean was born September 11th, 1952, and he actually graduated high school about 2 months after Michelle was born.
Oh, okay.
So, there's a little bit of an age gap there.
It doesn't seem as big of a deal the older you get, but when you put it into perspective, like, she was born and he was,
Which, but, I mean, she's a consenting adult now at this point. She's, like, 19 or something like that. And, so they dated for a couple years, and Michelle was actually the one who proposed to Jean.
So she likes him older, and, you know, whatever.
You know, well, and that was just it, too. Like, Michelle's goal in life was always to be a mother and to have a family. And she, I made some remark once, like, she had been dating a guy who just wasn't really going anywhere. Like, he didn't do well academically. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to get a job. And she's like, we weren't on the same level, and he would not be a good person to have a family with.
Yeah.
And
at least she knew that. Yeah. That's mature.
So, yeah. So she actually met Gene shortly after that. He was helping her and her roommate because he was a maintenance worker at the apartment her and her roommate lived in. So he helped them move, and they just kind of went from there.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so then they got married in June of 1996, and she was 24, and he was 44.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
So, all right.
Cool.
But then in August of 96, Michelle did finally start seeing a psychiatrist. She was also beginning her master's program in physical therapy at St. Ambrose, which, again, is in some Iowa town. I don't remember at this
There's
point.
There's a lot of Iowa towns there.
Yeah, I don't remember at this point where it was. I know her and Jean live in Coralville, Iowa. If I remember right, there was mention of them having a second home in a different town. I don't really know because it was, like, randomly thrown out there at one point, so I just ignored it.
Too many to keep track
Because then
of.
I think they used it as, like, a rental property and stuff like that. And, but they end up living in, Coralville, Iowa,
okay.
Which, no clue, honestly.
Never have heard of that? Ever?
No.
Probably never will,
Exactly. So, by December, Michelle had her first breakdown, and she dropped out of school. School had tried to be like, hey, why don't you take a break, why don't you ease up on this, but she was just done. She didn't know that she wanted to even do physical therapy anymore. You know, she was just done with it. And Michelle was a perfectionist and overly critical of herself, which I think comes into play of, like, that abandonment of her mom being punished by her mom. So now she's hard on herself. Mm-hmm. So she viewed that as a huge failure on her part. So then in February of 1998, Michelle attempted to take her own life for the first time. Ugh. And then...
That's sad.
You know, she stayed in the hospital. She was seeing her therapist. Then she made her second attempt in March of 1999.
Oh my gosh.
So, like, almost 1 year later. Now, through all of this, she was seeing her psychiatrist. I think she was even seeing a therapist, too.
Did something, sorry to mm-hmm. interrupt that, but did something happen up to that point? I mean, other than her whole back, it just, one day she just was so overwhelmed.
She was just, we'll find out later on that she can't handle stress.
Okay. And well, and master's program and stuff, that's a lot. Okay. I wasn't sure if something else.
No, it was just pretty much the fact of like, she just gotten married. I think she had a commute to St. Ambrose and stuff. And so like, even that, like this woman, like the tiniest little things will stress her out. So, like, a 30-minute drive one way, mm-hmm. for me personally, because I grew up in a small town, you had to drive at least 30 minutes to do anything. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of love long car rides now, because I'm so used to it. That's why I listen to my podcasts and my audiobooks.
Yep, there it is.
It's just little things.
Yeah.
So, I'm not 100% sure. It never said that there was no one big thing that triggered it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just... One, she kind of got to the point where I think she realized she didn't know that she wanted to do physical therapy. And I think then she's like, well, what was the whole point of all this?
I went this far.
This far and I'm driving all this way. Like, I don't think.
That's so sad, though, that she was at that point, that it was that bad, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like everyone has been at the point, I mean, of stress level, like.
Yes.
Just insane. But that's when you know, that's when you find your outlets. And yeah. You know, that's sad.
So, during all this, she was on medication, but mm-hmm. like she would start and stop it. And this is one thing, and we'll come back to her psychiatrist therapist later. With all these meds, I don't know why they were so okay with her letting this on and off with medications.
Yeah, that's not good at
all. No, and I think part of it, it sounds like her doctor did know to an extent, but I think sometimes she cut it sooner than her doctor knew. Which... it'll come up later on when we're talking about the court stuff. It'll kind of mention there, like, her therapist, psychiatrist did say, like, this is going to make it less effective, the starting mm-hmm. and stopping, you know. And, you know, yeah, we'll come back to that. But she did. So that, she starts and stops it. Because to her, being on medication, she viewed that as a failure mm-hmm. as well. So
I think a lot of people do. And
they
that's...
did. And so I even wrote in my notes, it's like, disclaimer. I don't feel like I'm on antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds for myself, which I'm like, those are the two weirdest things to have together. You have depression, which is a downer, and anxiety, which is an upper. And it's like,
I'm the same way. And I'm like, I grew up in a family with severe anxiety issues, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't have that. Well, growing up, I didn't think I had any of that, you know, until the older I got. And I remember the first time I had like a anxiety attack, and it was like, just one of those things, I was like, I don't even know what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and I was always embarrassed to tell people too, but I think once you're on them and you realize there's no shame in it, and if it makes you feel good, why would you not do something to help yourself?
Right. Well, and that's where too, I think I've said this before, like, I'm very much a proponent of being very open about my own mental health journey, because I'm like, listening to this podcast, it was My Favorite Murder. Like, they were very open in the beginning mm-hmm. about their mental health, and that helps me to be okay with it, because I felt so not alone. And so, like, if I can talk about this and it helps someone else without me even realizing it, then, like, that's awesome. I will be open all day long about the fact that I've seen therapists, I've on meds.
No shame in it
at
all.
It's helped a ton. Like, not a failure.
No.
So, then, you know, she's done that. She did end up getting, like, she worked in, like, a pharmacy at a university med center. I should have written this down. I got it. Because I don't talk about it a lot. It's a briefly mentioned just in passing. So she ends up getting some licensing so she can work in this pharmacy area. So she's doing that. And then on September 4th of 2001, Michelle and Jean welcomed their first son, Sean, into the family. Now, shortly after this, Michelle decided to ask her mom to come to therapy with her because she wanted to try and have a relationship with her, because at this point she was like, her and her mom didn't really, her mom never talked to her really when she was in high school growing up. Yeah. Like, she never really heard from her or anything like that. It was very sparse communication. And then after Sean was born, you know, here's her mom. I think she's on her third marriage at this point. I don't remember what happened with her and Richard. They're not together, but I think it was the third husband. Richard maybe left her too for another woman. There was cheating. The third husband eventually leaves her, but doesn't actually divorce her.
Sounds like a chronic,
you know, yes.
Serial.
But so Michelle was still going to Sumner, Iowa pretty frequently, where her family and stuff was. And then her mom was now visiting there more. And so her mom, of course, wanted to hold Seth or Sean right. and stuff. And so Michelle was like, I want her to have a relationship with my son, but I don't and stuff. And so she's like, come do this with me. And, you know, she said it felt like it went really well. I think they brought up the sexual assault stuff and everything. But for whatever reason, after this visit, Michelle decided to stop seeing her therapist. They only did this one visit together. Yeah.
Weird. So, did something happen? I mean, sounds like it went well. Did she just think, like, the work is done, we're good?
I don't know fully. It doesn't really explain. I don't know that Michelle really ever explained anything. Because Gene is even quoted saying, like, he was waiting outside with their son. And, uh-huh. you know, Marilyn came out. Michelle let her hold the baby. And she said it went really well. But that was kind of it.
It's bizarre.
So now, as Sean was growing, Michelle's cousin, Deb, who she was really close to, noted that Michelle seemed to be overly concerned about Sean's behavior if he acted up, like, at all. Like, instances that were never anything more than normal toddler behavior, Michelle seemed to take it to heart. Like, she would act embarrassed by it, she would apologize to people for it, like, her child needed to be perfect, you know, and she yep. needed to be the perfect mom. So then,
disclaimer, no child is perfect.
Right.
Just need to throw that out there.
Well, so I guess some experts believe that a history of untreated trauma plays itself out by demanding perfection of one's child or uh-huh. children. So
that, you can fix it through that.
Yeah. Yep. Something like that. And what kind of, like, she was a helicopter mom. Like,
to the extreme.
Yes. So then, by October 10th of 2006, their second son, Seth, was born.
Sean and Seth.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes. So Michelle suffered from postpartum depression, but she didn't seek any sort of help out for it.
Both times, did it say, or was it just
the sure both times, but I think the second time was a little harder severe. For her.
Yeah.
So she didn't bring up her postpartum depression, but she did go back to her therapist and got back on her medications.
Good,
but you're also not treating the postpartum, which can be a whole other thing.
It's like just putting a Band-Aid on something.
Yeah.
Severe.
Exactly. So she got back on them before she went back to work from her maternity leave. But once again, once she was about 6 months in to being off her maternity leave, so she felt like she had a good handle on the new routine of home with two kids and work life, she stop taking them again. But it does seem like that she was still seeing her therapist, though, at this point now. So this was kind of out of nowhere. I don't know when this happened or why this happened, but it was mentioned that at some point Michelle and Sean were observed during playtime by a psychologist who mentioned to Jean that she wondered about a potential attachment disorder where Sean was concerned. She noted that Michelle was very rigid and uncompromising during the playtime, and when Sean, like, would try to go do something new or play with a new toy or do a new game, she'd make him go back to what they were originally doing.
Huh.
So, the attachment disorder is defined as a child whose needs are ignored or met with a lack of emotional response from caregiver, then does not come to expect care or comfort or form a stable attachment to their caregivers. And that's from the Mayo Clinic that they had in the book. So pretty much a kid who goes to a caregiver or parent mm-hmm. and their needs aren't met, mm-hmm. are ignored or treated as inconsequential, will then not form relationships or trust and stuff.
Yeah, that's sad.
And Gene didn't really take this to heart. He's like, oh, she's just a good mom. I kind of, by the end of this, have issues with Gene.
Right.
But we'll come back to that. Like,
well, and when a professional is saying, like, this is what I'm observing.
Yeah.
Well, and you hear so many stories about people that when they think they're feeling better, they just stop their meds. And that's right. when everything happens.
It's yes. Like, and you're feeling better because of your meds.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
And you, yeah.
Yes. So Jean and the family all just viewed her as a really attentive mother. She would have a notebook every time she did a play date or anything with other moms that she felt were more experienced than her to ask them, like, questions about parenting and, like, how they disciplined or did things and things like that.
Weird.
And she even went so far as, like, one time the family was on some sort of vacation trip or whatever, she woke Sean up in the middle of the night to feed him vegetables because she realized she didn't feed him the 4 servings she felt he should have a day. And I'm like, how did no one in the family think that was a little extreme?
That's a red flag right there. Like, the other stuff, I know some parents can just be overly controlling. Still, though. But then something like that, that's like something's
your,
not right.
Your kid needs uninterrupted sleep, too.
Right.
I think one night, give him an extra helping tomorrow.
Right. It's okay. Do you know how many days my kid goes without having a vegetable? Judgment, please.
Right.
But, you know, choose your battles.
Exactly.
She's healthy. She's okay.
Yeah.
She does eat vegetables, just not daily.
I mean, hey. So, by the summer of 2007, Michelle's mental health is in decline. She was easily stressed. She would start every day expecting it to be perfect, and if one tiny little thing went wrong, it would ruin her whole day. Just the whole day. And so, on December 14th of 2007, Michelle was driving somewhere with the boys, and she, quote-unquote, lost control of her car and ended up in the Iowa River. And now I say, quote-unquote, lost because for years, Michelle would claim that it was an accident, but eventually she does admit that it was a suicide attempt.
With the kids in the car?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And we'll kind of come... There were men who helped and rescued, and one of them was like, it happened so quickly, I thought maybe she had ice or something. Other one was like, it did seem kind of odd.
It was, but...
And he questioned whether it was an accident or not. So, now these three men, they were following all in different cars. They weren't together. It was three strangers. They were Corey Rath, Mark Peterson, and Josh Shepard. And despite the freezing waters, they jumped in to help rescue the boys and the mom.
Some good Heartland people there. Heartland kind.
You got that Heartland kind in there.
That's right.
Corey was the first one to get near the car, but when he was still 15 feet away, Michelle started to hand Sean out of the car. And despite Corey telling her to wait, she let go of Sean, who, what did I say?
Did you say this was a river?
Yeah,
Iowa River. Okay, not a lake. Like,
no, no, it's Iowa River.
Mm.
In December, Sean is like...
It's not only that, but it's probably like a current.
So Sean's like six or seven. He's probably about six, at least. Luckily, Corey made it to him in time. And the other man, Josh, met him like halfway, because at this point... They just jumped in, clothes and all, you know. So, Corey was starting, hypothermia was starting to set in. So, he was having a harder time swimming. His coat was weighing him down. So, Josh meets him halfway out to take the load of the child and gets Sean to shore. And then, at that point, then Mark has reached the car next. And he was able to get Seth out and make it to shore with him. So, then while they're on shore, like, they're in the cars while they're waiting for paramedics to come. They're trying to get the kids warmed up and everything like that. And the kids were taken to the hospital before Michelle. Because then onlookers say that she took a long time to try and get out of the car. And then when she did make it to the roof of the car, she just stood there frozen for a long time. She finally kind of jumps into the water. But she didn't really seem to be trying that hard to swim. She seemed to be struggling a lot.
Initially, you could think, like, okay, she's in shock.
I mean,
but with all the other
history.
Well,
and because we know, yes. So, at this point then, too, there's a passing cyclist who rides their bike in December.
Crazy people that are hardcore bikers.
Well, this man is hardcore. We're going to get into that. His name is Steve McGuire. So, he noted her struggling, didn't even hesitate. He jumps in, grabs her, swims to shore.
Good people.
So, and I have to tell, so this is how badass he is. This isn't the first time he saved someone. It was like the third or fourth.
Wow.
The first time was in 1993. Okay, so it was the third. And then again in 2003.
Someone get this guy up.
Oh, he got a medal.
Heart or something.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was like, I know that's not the same
thing. All the men get like medals or like awards for their heroism and stuff.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah. So now we're into the summer and fall of 2008. And it's, Seth's second birthday. Deb's noticing that Michelle's not doing really well. And now, Michelle's a very religious person. Mm-hmm. So she would talk to Deb, and Deb was also very religious, so she was always telling her to pray about it. Which, don't get me wrong, that can be helpful.
But you, when you also need professional help, that is also important. Yes.
So, you know, because Michelle would actually express to her fears, like personal hate, fears of damnation, and her inability to protect children. And so part of this whole, like, fear of damnation is going to come into play with her mom and her feelings with her mom. Because, I'm probably right at somewhere, but, like, her mom at some point in 2008 here, late 2007, was dying.
Okay.
Of, like, liver failure, because of her alcoholism. So, they think she has, like, months to live. So, Deb and Michelle put her into this nursing home in Sumner, where she makes a miraculous recovery. Like, this woman is thriving there. And now while she was on death's door, Michelle felt like she had to go visit every weekend.
Right.
And it sounds like it's a little bit of a jaunt from Coralville to Sumner. Don't know exactly how far, but a little bit of a jaunt. So She, with all this and all, this was adding to her stress. So then she was angry at her mom for not dying like she was supposed to. And then she felt that, you know, but then she had anger that she had to be there for her mom and her mom wasn't there for her.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Oh,
these
yeah.
are all things you should be working out with a therapist at this point.
Right.
So, you know, and then Deb also noticed that on Seth's second birthday party, Michelle seemed unemotional and almost detached from the event, which is the exact opposite of, like, the helicopter mom she usually is. Right.
And was that the son that she was observed with?
No. Sean, the oldest,
that is. One was. Okay.
Yes.
That's crazy, and like I said, though. I mean, I'm sure it would be with yes. both either way then.
Right.
But just curious. Okay.
Right. That she's the same way with both boys.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I said, that observation thing, it just kind of threw it out there. It never said when it happened. It didn't say why it happened, but it was Sean. So, and, you know, Jean even started to notice that, Jean and Deb both said they noticed that Michelle was becoming more short and irritable with Sean because he's the older one at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Toddlers, 7-year-olds, they act out. They're going to push boundaries.
Right. Pretty age appropriate.
Yeah. I guess Jean and Deb did mention that to get his way, Sean would be like, well, I almost died in the river, which isn't, but then maybe at that point we're like, hey,
yeah.
it's manipulating,
yeah.
but then maybe we should be like, hey, maybe our son needs a therapist for
right.
this traumatic event.
That he keeps bringing up. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have anyway. That's, like,
that's terrifying.
Very scary. Yeah.
If I ended up in the river, I would need so many.
I mean, even now, like, that's, like, my biggest fear is, like, drowning and being
yeah.
in water. And
listen,
I don't.
Don't ever listen to the Stuff You Should Know podcast about drowning. It's.
That's, like, my biggest fear. And I don't know why.
I listened to it and it gave me anxiety, but I also couldn't stop listening because it was amazing the facts you learned, because drowning is a cause of death. It doesn't mean you can drown and not die.
Yeah, yeah.
And like how they went into it was so crazy. But yes, it's horrifying.
That is the worst feeling when you're underwater and you like
yeah.
can't get air fast enough.
Yeah. So let's maybe get our child
mm-hmm.
some help for that if they're using that as a manipulation
Correct.
Tactic.
That's pretty alarming.
Yeah. So then along with her already anxious state, you know, that's continuing to wear at her. And all this driving back and forth, that's wearing on her. You know, her mom not
that's
dying,
more.
Her anger and resentment. You know, she's going through all this. Then, which I didn't even go down the rabbit hole of looking up this other murder case that was close to them.
Uh-huh.
So a family who they knew and went to church with, like, they weren't best friends with them, but they were in their circle. They knew them.
Okay.
They talked with them.
Small town.
Uh-huh. It was an instance of the husband father killing his wife and children and then killing himself.
Okay. Well, that's pretty traumatic.
Yeah. And then not too long after that, Jean's uncle, who they were also really close to, died by suicide.
Oh my gosh. And this was all within a certain...
It was all within a, like, months of each other. And like Gene had lost his job and it took several months for him to get a new one, and when he did, it paid less, but like she was making more than he was. But they also had like this rental property
yeah.
randomly somewhere
huh.
that they were getting income from, so it's like they weren't hurting, but like all these things building up. So like then because of these deaths so close, like
that's
for someone who already has suicidal ideation.
Oh, yeah.
It really brought that back up in her. And then not just for herself. She started to have thoughts that because her children likely will inherit her mental illness and because they would have the alcoholic gene, that they would be better off if they were dead. Because her thought process was that if they didn't live to become adults who would sin and deal with all these horrible things, then they wouldn't have to spend years atoning for their sins before they got into heaven. She figured they'd get into heaven right away.
Wow.
Because religion is, like I said, she was a very, like, I didn't even cover, like, the religion's talked about a lot.
Right. Did it say
No.
No? That's no. just an interesting concept, but.
So this is where we're going to get into the actual crime.
Okay.
So now, we're back to October 26th of 2008. Michelle left the house with her two sons, telling Jean they were going to visit her mom in Sumner. Jean had a yoga class that day, and so he didn't go. Like, they did yoga and stuff together, and then he was going. I don't know why, like, that would change it, but I guess if you're going almost every weekend, he's probably like, I'm going to go to my yoga. Yeah.
It's not anything out of the norm.
It sounds like, stuff seems fairly planned on Michelle's part. Like, mm-hmm. this isn't something she just decided that day, which I'll get into my thoughts and feelings on later. But, she even called her cousin Deb and her mom to tell them that they were heading there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for what she had planned, I'm kind of surprised she did. Well, we'll come back to that. I guess I'm not. Anyways, so Michelle and the boys left the house at 11:15 a.m. And sometime between 2:30 and 3, Jean tried to call Michelle's cell phone, but only got her voicemail. But he didn't really think too much of it. He just started making dinner, expecting them to be home by 6:30. But by 7:45, after he had called Deb and Michelle's mom, both of whom said they'd spoken to her that morning but hadn't actually seen her, which I'm like, are we not concerned about that?
Right.
How are we not calling?
Especially knowing she has this history. I mean,
well, and at this point, no one thinks.
Though, I guess.
But it also said that Deb and Jean noticed her mental health was declining.
Well, and like to us, we're hearing it all at once in the background, yes. So like it seems more apparent.
Right.
But when you're living that, it's easier to not notice some of those things when it's
exactly.
A constant, so.
And Jean even says later that like he never once thought she would harm the kids. Like that was never a fear of his. So, after he finds out, he calls the police. He was honest about her past suicide attempts, but because they had been so long ago, he said he didn't think this was the case. He didn't fear she would harm the kids. And especially, too, because remember, at this point, everyone still thinks the river incident was an accident.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, yeah, we obviously know it probably wasn't, but...
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, little did Jean know that Michelle had driven the boys to this hook and liner pond just outside of Littleton, Iowa. And there she first pulled 7-year-old Sean from the car. She duct taped his eyes, nose, and mouth, and then she slit his throat.
Oh my gosh.
So he passed out pretty quickly.
Oh my gosh.
And she left him for dead. But a short while later, Sean woke up to his little brother Seth's cries. So Michelle also slit Seth's throat, and it was determined that he died within minutes.
But the other one was still alive?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
We'll kind of, hold on.
Sorry, I'm just like disgusted. Like, like you said, I'm glad you had a little trigger warning on that.
Cause... Yes. So Sean pulls the duct tape off of his face and stuff, and he runs to the van and he locks himself in. And later Sean would go to his little brother to try and help him, but obviously it was too late.
Where was she at this point?
Well,
okay, sorry. I know, see, I'm jumping ahead. I'm like, tell me, I need to know.
So he noted that the first aid kit was already near his brother, and that was part of Michelle's plan.
Oh.
She made it look like she had tried
to save him.
She didn't, but she made it look that way.
But I wonder what she'll probably share, I'm sure. My thought was just, what was her story going to be, how his throat got slit, you know?
Oh, we're
he probably
there.
Tripped and fell is what
no,
she's...
No, we're getting
okay.
there.
I'm just getting really mad.
She has a whole plan.
Makes me more angry.
She has a whole plan. So, she had written a note explaining that a quote-unquote bad man had snuck into their van while she stopped to let the boys play at a playground before heading on. And she did stop at this playground and let the boys play.
She covered her tracks.
Yeah. She even called her mom from a gas station to tell her that they were doing this. And she made sure to stay in that gas station for at least 15 minutes playing the part of the doting, loving mother because she wanted to be remembered being there. And she wanted people to see the image of this loving, doting mother. So this way, when it came out later that they were missing and murdered, no one would believe that she had done it. They would think this bad man had done it. Because, and we'll come to this, Michelle had planned to kill herself too. So all mm-hmm. three were going to be dead. So she wanted it to look like all three were murdered.
I was wondering that
She
part.
Didn't want people to know she had killed her children.
Mm-hmm. Of course not.
Gosh. Yeah. So the way the note was written as if she had written in the midst of this attack, which is part of the, what was not, like, she planned this out. She wrote this note a couple weeks prior, and then she rewrote it while she was there, and she even ended it with, "Oh no, he's coming back." And near the pond, she, like, kicked around dirt to make it look like she had fought with him. So after she's done setting the scene, which I guess she doesn't notice that Sean's not where he was when she had left him, or that he's locked himself right. in the van.
That's like, why I was like, how did he just get away? But
I don't fully know. She cut her own throat 4 times.
Oh my god.
Like, she even cut through her trachea.
And she still did not bleed out and die.
Yeah. So, Gene will be asked later, like, why he thinks Sean lived and Seth didn't. And he made some remark about, like, if you cut it cleanly through the artery, it'll clot quickly and you won't bleed out. But if you don't cut it cleanly, that's how you bleed out. I don't know the science behind it. There was something they said later, I think, because Sean was sitting in the front of the van on the floor, like, sitting up. And it was colder out at night. So they think that that helped him.
So he lived.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know if he ends up dying on. Okay.
Sean does live. Because wow. Sean is how we, yes.
Okay, that's how we know things.
We'll come into more things. Okay. Yes. So, at 7:30 a.m. now on Monday, October 27th, which is now the day after, Deb Hind, not to be confused with Michelle's cousin Deb.
Okay.
Deb. This is a different Deb. We're in right outside Littleton, Iowa. She's about a half mile from this hook and liner pond. She heard a knocking on her door. And now she worked a night shift as like a psychiatric nurse, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just getting off of
like,
she was like just going to bed. And like her husband and her daughter lived with them too, but they had just left for work. Like, I think her daughter literally left like 5 minutes before Michelle comes knocking at her door.
Jeez.
So when she opens the door, she thought it was an injured boy stumbled in. So she immediately calls 911. And while they're waiting for the paramedics to arrive, she tried to ask the quote-unquote boy what had happened. But they had trouble speaking due to her trachea being cut. So Michelle asks for a pen, like a notepad and pen. And when she has it, she writes her name. She writes Jean's cell phone and their home phone, which the cell phone, I guess, was like the wrong number. But then the home phone, it went to voicemail, which Gene might have not answered because he might have been leaving it open for the police. I don't know for sure. She didn't talk to anyone. But while Michelle laid there, Deb noticed that she's wearing gloves. And when she asked her why, she said it was because she'd been trying to help her boys. Which I'm like, first of all, if it's life or death, you're going to worry about putting gloves
right.
on
That's what I was
to
thinking.
Apply first aid to your children.
At that point, it's like, you don't even care.
No.
You can be butt-ass naked, and you're going to, like, do whatever.
I didn't even put up. My daughter was sick this past week with that GI bug going around. I literally caught her vomit in my hands.
You know you're a parent when it gets to that level.
Fortunately, it was like, we didn't have much in our stomach, and it was just mostly water. That was helpful.
Yep.
But listen, there were no gloves involved.
There's been a lot of signs and things that have ended up on me from my child. You don't even need to know.
Yeah, exactly. So
you don't care at that point.
Yeah, that just seems like why? But later, Michelle's going to admit that she was wearing the gloves during the entire crime. So even when she went to the lake to fake the scene of a fight, she did at one point bind her own hands and feet with duct tape. And
this was 2008, right? So it's not like she's, I mean, I understand why she's trying to do that, but does she think that,
Well, and see, she had left her cell phone at that park, too.
Oh.
Which it gets found, like, Monday morning, and it's turned into the police, and that they realize it's this missing woman. So, you know, Michelle had told Deb and these first responders, a man attacked us. And in the note, she even described him as her stepfather. Like, he sounded like her. She even described his smell, and she said it was the same as her stepfather's. Wow. So
that says a lot, though, too,
Yeah. Well, Gina later...
Gina
later say that he feels like she became her stepfather almost. Like, she was, you know, so it wasn't Michelle doing this to their boys.
Right.
It was her stepfather.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the same tendencies.
Well, and so he kind of theorizes that she has, like, a multiple personality disorder type thing. I don't know. It doesn't sound like there's been anything to suggest that. But that's one of his things later. And, I mean, if you're trying to cope with the fact that your wife killed your child and tried to kill your other one, you know. So when first responders arrived to the spot where the van was, they found Seth's lifeless body laying in some brush only a few feet from the van. And like I said, at this point, they believe there's potentially a murder suspect on the loose who could still be in the area. So they're trying to be careful. They're combing around.
Scary.
You know,
yeah.
But then they find Sean huddled on the floor of the front of the van, and he tells them it was actually their own mother who did this
to
them.
And how old was he then?
7.
Okay.
And so... Oh my God. One comment he made. See, this is the other thing. Like, the author kept repeating. She's like, he told this story to this person, this one to this one. Instead of saying he repeated himself, she literally went through it all again.
Mm. Yeah.
But one thing Sean did say that it was heartbreaking. He said he made some remark that he had been there for 2 days, and actually it was only about 19 hours, which is still a lot. But can you imagine being 7? Your mom attacked you, and he even told him, he said he didn't know why. She wasn't angry. They hadn't gotten in trouble, so he didn't understand why his mom was doing this.
So he locked himself in the van.
Uh-huh.
And so did she, I wonder...
He waited until he thought she was gone.
Oh, and then went.
Because she slit her own throat. Okay. She lay there. She passed out for a while, and she ends up, like, stumbling around and walking. Because, like, once she realizes she's not dying... She stumbles around for a while, and then she ends up at this house.
I'm just glad he was, like, safe in there. I can't believe he lived. I mean, what a brave kid. Gosh.
Yeah. So, Sean had to have surgery, but then he was released to his father's care shortly after that. Michelle also had to have surgery, which then, like, she had, like, a breathing tube and all that for a long time because of her trachea.
Mm-hmm.
But once she was well enough to be discharged, she was immediately arrested and taken to jail. Jean would visit Michelle and Jill every week and talk to her on the phone.
Wow.
From November 8th to January 9th. And that's eventually when a no contact order was put in place stating that he and Michelle could have no contact. And another was put in place saying Michelle could have no contact with Sean for 5 years. Which, this is when I start to really dislike Jean, by the way. So...
Does Gene still have custody of...
Yes, Gene has custody.
I mean, because he didn't technically
his mom,
do anything.
No,
but...
his mom moves in to help with Sean and stuff. But we'll get into why I don't, like, start to dislike Gene. Mm. So, on November 26, 2008, Michelle pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Gene asked at some point to have the no-contact order lifted so that Michelle could see Sean and so he could see and speak to his wife. And in regards to Sean, the prosecutor stated that until Sean's therapist tells us he is ready and it might be beneficial, then that is the time to revisit the no contact order. Yes, 100%. Why does a prosecutor have to have more compassion for your child than you do? Like,
that's
to me,
sickening. Like, why is he almost,
so to
choosing
me,
her? It's almost like...
That's just it. I wrote in my notes, Gene seemed to care more about his and Michelle's own wants and needs than what might be best for Sean. And that's even, there's more coming with that even.
Oh, great.
So now in regards to Jean and Michelle having contact, the defense argued that they're adults and they can make their own decisions on who they do or do not talk to. The prosecutor again was like, yeah, but Jean having contact with Michelle could have an adverse effect on Sean's mental health. Again, thinking about his child first.
Right.
So ultimately the judge ruled that no contact orders would both stay in place for 5 years. So, this is, again, back to why I really think Gene cared more about his wants and needs and Michelle's wants and needs.
Than theirs.
So, family members expressed concern to him that he was having phone conversations with Michelle in front of Sean. And Jean's response was like, well, I asked Sean and he said it was fine. I'm sorry. What? The child's 7 and he went through something super traumatic where his own mother tried to kill him and he doesn't know why.
And he watched his brother die.
So maybe he's afraid that if he tells his dad no,
what he's gonna do.
Yeah.
Can, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. No, no.
No.
Like, even if, like, I can understand, like, you having compassion for your wife, you're both religious, and, like, she did need serious mental help.
Right.
We'll get into that more later and stuff, too, but, like, still.
She tried to, well, she did kill your child.
Yes, and, like I said, I can't personally see forgiving my spouse for killing our child, this, no matter their mental health. Nope. Especially because she did have help. Like, she had the help available, and she didn't take it.
And it's not like the signs weren't there
either. Right. And so, like, I get her, you know, there are those whole things. But, like, I can see forgiving her because of her mental illness for that. I still can't imagine, though, being like, I forgive you, but I still have to think about what's best for my child who survived you.
It's one thing, yeah, to still love them and want best for them, but, like, peace out. I mean, in the sense of, like we don't need to have a relationship.
Make sure your at least make sure your child isn't ever aware of it. If you're talking to her, don't do it in front of that child.
You'd feel so betrayed, you know, and scared.
So, okay, and that's not even the worst of it.
Oh, no.
Family members also urged him to sell the van that Michelle had been driving that, you know, Sean struggled to survive in.
Correct, because that's traumatic.
Yeah.
AF.
So it was a Volkswagen Eurovan. Gene refused to sell it until he was ordered by the court to do so. And then you know what he does? He got another Eurovan that looked exactly the same on the inside, just it's maroon instead of white. What the fuck, dude? First of all, I don't know how big a Eurovan is, but to me, I see one of those big boxy vans.
Right. You don't need that. Why? That's confusing to me. Was it like he was almost like, I don't know. I want to say like holding on to that because of the other son, like some
sort of weird, twisted. See, and to me, it feels like more so that he's holding on to it because it's his last piece of Michelle.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? It seems like he's way more concerned with her.
Yes.
Than his children.
Yes.
At this point, I can't believe when he's not, like, when the court is forcing him or saying, you have to sell this van, isn't this a sign? Why aren't they, like, okay, we don't know if you are a good caretaker for your son right now.
I mean, I'm sure, I don't know.
I mean, you have to have certain things, I'm sure, in order, but, like, that's very scary to me.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. I was like, for real? I don't care. Like, cool, you love your wife, you've forgiven her, I get all that, but you're not even thinking about your child, at all. So, okay, so back to the case.
Yeah, sorry.
Almost exactly 1 year to the day, on October 28th of 2009, Michelle's trial begins. And remember, Michelle had pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, according to the Iowa Criminal Code, a person cannot be convicted of a crime if at the time of the crime, the individual was diagnosed with a diseased or deranged condition of the mind. And then taking it a step further, the person's mental state or condition must be proven to have seriously altered their ability to tell right from wrong. So, of course, both the defense and the prosecution have their own experts to testify on Michelle's mental state.
Wow.
So we're going to start with the defense first. The psychologist for the defense stated that given Michelle's suicide attempts, her low tolerance for stress, her mental illness and childhood trauma, a different therapy approach and different therapist could have better helped her. She also felt that Michelle's therapist failed her by not referring her to a therapist who specialized in childhood trauma because it was something that they never addressed. So I do think she was failed in that regards.
Yeah.
By her therapist, because it sounds like it was known the therapist knew about it, but they never talked about it in session.
Then that, yes.
And if you don't feel comfortable as a professional, if you don't feel like you can do what's needed for your client in that, you should be referring them out.
Right. And I feel like the few times I have gone to see a therapist, they always start with like history of growing up and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Which maybe in the 90s, late 90s, when she first started being a therapist, it was a little different, but not different enough to not address sexual trauma from childhood.
Yeah, that's a pretty big piece.
Yeah, so I do think she was failed in that regards by her therapist. Yeah. But on the same hand, she had the luxury of hiring her therapist. It wasn't a, this is a Medicaid appointed.
That's true.
She could have sought out another therapist too. Like, yes, I think her therapist failed her by not saying, hey, I think this needs to be addressed and I don't think I'm qualified for it.
Mm-hmm.
But she still could have made that option too. So I don't know. I'll kind of wrap up my thoughts at the end. But so this psychologist also states that Michelle suffered from severe depression, PTSD, anxiety, and a variety of personality disorders that put her at a risk for psychotic thoughts. They don't say what personality disorders, I don't really, But so she testified that Michelle knew what she did was legally wrong, but morally right because of her faith. Because like I said, she felt like if her kids got to adulthood, they'd have this mental illness, they could be alcoholics, and then they'd have to atone for so much before they could actually go to heaven. So at least this way they would go straight to heaven.
Yeah, you always hear the people that kill their kids are like, someone said to do that or this is going to happen to them. And it's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, in this point, this wasn't her hearing voices. This was her own thoughts.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the same thing in the sense of like looking at it, like you're trying, you're doing it to protect them.
Yeah. So, so like I said, because of her religious background, she just thought that they'd get to heaven and it would be better for them instead of having to atone later.
What a vicious way to do it though, too. I mean, I don't think there's any good way to do that, but...
I mean, yeah, something not painful.
I mean, that's medicine to make them just
go to sleep or something. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Ugh.
Anyways, so then the psychiatrist for the prosecutor disagreed, of course, because they always will. But still, they said that if she really did think what she did was the right thing, why did she deny it? Why was she trying to hide that it was even her? Like, even if she had died with him, why did she try to cover it? That it was her.
She planned it out pretty meticulously.
Yes. So, and he said the evidence failed to prove that Michelle's mental state was unbalanced enough that she wasn't aware of how her actions would affect her sons. He stated that her meticulous planning, which she had actually written that note a few weeks prior and then rewrote, exposed her thoughts as being very well organized. Which I have to agree, like, this isn't, like, a random, like, all of a sudden she had a breakdown, she's like, they're going to be better off. Like, she, I mean, I think it was a breakdown, but it wasn't right then and there.
Wasn't the kind that you like typically hear about.
Yes. Yeah. So the trial ends on November 4th of 2009, which a lot of people, because this was a high profile case, and so like they thought that this was going to take longer. And then after just 2 hours of deliberation, the jury came back with a verdict of guilty on all counts. And so she was charged with first degree murder, attempted murder, and child endangerment causing serious injury. So she was sentenced to life in prison for the first degree murder, 25 years for the attempted murder, and 10 years for the child endangerment. And so this part I didn't understand. She was also ordered to pay $100,000 in restitutions to Seth's estate. And I don't get how that works because Gene's still married to her, so wouldn't he be liable for that? And isn't it just going to him anyways? I don't fully get that.
I have to look into that. That's weird.
I didn't look into it.
I wouldn't even know, I mean, enough about, like, the legal reasons behind that. Yeah. That's interesting.
I should have asked one of my lawyer friends.
Yeah, I wonder what the... why. So was Gene... did he have to testify at her trial or anything? Do you know?
He didn't testify. Sean testified. They did a recording.
Okay, I was gonna say...
They didn't make him go sit there. They just did a recording.
Good.
And, like, I read an article, too, that they had interviewed one of the jurors, and, like, we all had a chance to, like, speak. Like, it seems like it was quick, but we all, this was thoroughly thought out.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with them in this aspect. They said, you know, we do think she was mentally unwell, but in the guidelines of what
they're
legally,
yes,
I agree, she didn't fit the criteria of not guilty by reason of insanity, not for the, because I think she was, while her actions weren't right, she knew.
Yes.
Well enough.
She knew it was wrong.
She knew it was wrong. She knew, even if she was going to kill herself with them, that even if she planned on dying by suicide, she knew.
By all the things she did.
That it would be wrong. She didn't want people to think she was the one who'd done it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she definitely needed mental help.
Yes.
And I think maybe some family members dropped the ball on not listening to things. Her therapist definitely dropped the ball.
Yeah.
But she's also... So then I'll kind of get... The judge commented at her sentencing that while friends and family said that the mental health and judicial system failed her, she had a fair trial. She was diagnosed and received treatment for her mental health, and that it was her decision to stop her treatments. He stated that many people don't get that chance. And like I said, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Like, Iowa's mental health for, like, people who can't afford those things is even Omaha's.
Yeah.
It's just not okay.
No. And that's, I think that's a lot of the reason. I know in the past when I was like, I think everyone can benefit from talking to a therapist, 100%. Whether you're going through something or not.
Yeah.
It's just good to talk to someone who doesn't know you. I mean, you get that different viewpoint from them, you know, but I think a lot of the time when I thought about doing it, I was like, well, gosh, I can't afford that. And my insurance, like, you know, wouldn't cover it or whatever at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it just wasn't a priority.
Yeah. And so, you know, I wonder, you know, if things would have been different, if she had kept on her meds, if she had had a therapist who had, you know, put that forth, if her cousin who knew she had these thoughts of self-hatred and stuff, instead of just telling her to pray and stuff, which I get it, but like also being like, hey, have you talked to your therapist about these things?
And how does her husband not... I mean, once again, I think, like, you know, you don't notice things when you're around people, I mean, all the time, but...
So, you know, I try to give Gene the benefit of the doubt of, like, prior, but the afterwards with his son, because the thing is, like...
disturbing.
Unfortunately, what I read from the book, I couldn't find anything now, the book's a few years old, Sean didn't end up so well. I mean, I think he's doing okay now, but, like... So his dad, this is the other thing. His dad, he went back to school, which he was going to this like Christian private elementary school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to go back there because they all knew what had happened.
And that's,
but Gene made him continue going there.
And how awful. And kids are mean.
Well, apparently it sounds like no one was mean about it or anything like that, but the fact that they all knew.
It's still, like, humiliating.
Yeah. And so then when he got into middle school, he started acting out, having issues. Like, he was sent to a couple different, in treatment homes.
Yeah, you can't blame him.
You know, the thing is, too, he went to a couple of them, he did well there, but then, like, when he'd come back home, he would, he'd just start acting out again, you know?
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, it's going to be another pattern of that
He went to another treatment home in Des Moines, and his dad would visit him a lot, but he actually had an aunt who lived nearby, so she would visit him a ton, and they actually became really close. So she asked Gene if Sean could live with her and go to high school in Des Moines. Sean wanted to.
Yeah.
Gene said no.
Fresh start.
Yeah, Gene said no. He thought that Sean would be better living with him. And I don't agree at all.
I don't agree either.
But eventually, by 16, Sean drops out of high school. Like, Gene had been taken to truancy court several times because of Sean skipping and all of that.
Gosh.
So, I don't know what he's doing now. I hope he's doing well. I hope he got his own mental help as well.
Yeah, if anything, hopefully that's like a... wake up, I mean, not wake up call, but in the sense of, like, they can recognize mental health as an issue in the family.
Yeah. Well, especially after that traumatic experience. I mean, even the way his mom had been raising him, even if she didn't, like, he probably would have had some shit to work through.
Oh, yeah.
With a therapist, but after, your mom trying to kill you and killing your brother.
The person you're supposed to trust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Michelle appealed her conviction several times. They were all... you know, upheld. And so she's exhausted all of her opportunities for appeal. But now her lawyer's trying to, like, get that overturned so she can continue to appeal.
It's just going to be in game for the rest of her life. I mean, does she have any remorse for anything?
I mean, she does. But I don't know. The things I read that Michelle said it never sounded like Michelle took responsibility for anything. It was always her mental health, and it was triggered because of her mom, because of this happening and that happening. And it's like, at some point, you have to take responsibility.
Right.
Like, yes, this was the start of it, but you were in therapy, and you didn't take the path you needed to with it.
Well, and even then, it's like, it's one thing, you know, to forgive someone, but, like, not forget it. Like, okay, I forgive you, but I don't. Want to move forward. But it's like, at this point, I don't see how her husband is okay with this either. I mean, if she at least confessed and, like, apologized,
and I mean,
that still would be hard.
She has, but, and stuff, but, like, I think Gene's convinced himself that it wasn't her, that she has multiple personalities, and so it was some other personality. I don't know.
That's just awful.
Gene's a whole other thing.
That's a hard. I mean, that's like, that's a bad situation. Yeah.
So, to kind of wrap this up, I did want to put out there, if you or someone you know are having thoughts of suicide, you can call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255, or you can text HELLO, all capital, to 741-741, and both of those are available 24/7. And of course, I'll type that in the show notes as well. I probably will even put it when I post the, like, pictures for the week and stuff. But also, I just kind of want to say too, listen, we don't have advertisers yet or anything, but, like, go to Psychology Today if you're looking for someone. That's how I found my therapist, and I loved her. Or our podcast isn't sponsored yet by them, but BetterHelp. Every podcast I listen to is sponsored by them. They have codes. Give that a try, because I know you can text and do that. So if you're having those thoughts, like, reach out, do something.
And we're obviously not, like, licensed professionals in this field, but if you are really desperate for help and don't even know where to begin,
Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
This is what happens when you record outside. Oh, it's so cute.
I mean, I don't hate them, but, like, I don't want to see it in my driveway, you know, when you're not expecting it.
But sorry, that was...
Okay, but no, like, I mean, if you really don't even know where to begin, shoot us a message, and we're happy to help at least point you in the right direction.
Well, and so, shout out to my sister, Jessie.
Yes.
She's a psychologist, counselor, so... I mean, I can at least get information from her, even if people reach out, you know, they don't know where to start. Like,
I can that's good.
Refer you, you know, to Capstone. They do good. So,
yeah,
there's a lot of therapists there as well for her, you know, so there's options.
Yes.
So, and I know I asked her, because, you know, it's not committed suicide, it's death by suicide now.
Yep. You have to be very careful how you...
Well, because... And it's true, because it's... Committed suicide puts blame on them almost, and it's not. It's a symptom of a disease. Uh-huh. But, so, I reached out to Jessie, and I was like, hey, you know, she got me... I was like, I know there's a hotline, I know I can Google it, but I also know you probably have it readily available.
Oh, yeah.
So, she let me ask those questions and stuff. So, yes, we're very much all about, like, get the help you need. Like, talk to someone. Medications if needed.
Yep.
I love that now they're making things text friendly, because I hate talking on the phone.
I know.
When I reached out to my therapist to, like, make my first appointment, I did it via email at first, and then she called me. Like, even typing the email was horrible, but then she called me, and I was like, oh dear God,
I
have to come and talk to you.
I know, but something about a phone call is different. Like, can we just discuss it via text or email?
Yes.
Like, no.
Yes.
I'm the same. I don't like to talk on the phone, and it's scary just taking that first step.
Yes.
But yeah, I get ads, like, I see stuff on Instagram all the time where it's like, you can find someone online and talk to them online. And I think that that's cool that they put that stuff out there.
For sure. I love it. So, like I said, I just focus. I do think there's a lot of mental health, and I do think that the conviction was right.
Yeah.
I think she was failed a little bit. But I also think she was cognizant enough to have gotten the help she needed.
Yeah, I know.
So that was kind of tough for me. I was like, God, I understand to an extent her sick thought process in it. But
she should have gotten help.
Yeah.
I think if they would have worked through some of those issues...
Right, and that's just it. It could have been
prevented, yeah.
Yeah, if she would have talked to her therapist about the resentment towards her mother for not dying, even.
Yes.
And, like, I can totally understand her being resentful of her mom, not that you were only supposed to live this long, so I was doing what I was supposed to. I was being the good Christian, the good daughter.
Yeah.
But, like, this is exhausting for me because you haven't worked through those things.
Yeah.
Ugh. So, I don't know. It was a tough, it's a tough case. Like, it's a tough one to be like, what a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Gene, on the other hand, I don't like.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of him because he basically stood there, I mean, and still stood by her side when he has a son.
Yeah.
He lost a son and almost lost another son because of her.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that your wife even did that, let alone you're still picking her over your kids.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Never been in that situation.
I just think he handled it poorly. I don't think he put Sean's needs or wants at all.
No. And I know, I mean, how traumatic for him, Gene, I mean, to have to deal with that too. And I mean, it's not like anyone has a manual on how to navigate that. But
and I mean,
he should have got help for himself too.
Yeah. And maybe
he did.
Maybe. I don't know. The book only gave so much. You know, you could only find so much. So who knows? But that's Iowa. Listen, it was all over the place. Littleton, Iowa. I don't even know how I'm going to label this. It's just going to be Iowa. I don't even know. All over Iowa.
Well, you know, they always say, no offense to anyone, you know, idiots out
wandering around.
You could,
I don't think I'm going to put that. I don't think.
The killer. No.
No, I mean, because I always put, like, the town and the state after the title.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't even know what town I'll put. I guess I'll put Littleton because that's where happened. Yeah, yep. But like,
you could just say, maybe just the town it like happened. Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't even know where I'm going to put. You were all over Iowa. Like, it happened in Littleton, but they lived in Coralville, but they were in Sumner a lot.
Sumner. Yeah. Those all stick out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Mm. But that's this week's case. I know it was a bit heavy. We're going pretty long. This podcast episode is going to be almost an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
So, I guess, you know how to reach us at this point.
Yep. And,
email us any of your questions, thoughts, stories at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com.
And I think coming up here, hopefully soonish, when we hit a certain milestone, we're not quite sure what it's going to be, but we're going to start doing some fun, like a fun giveaway or contest thing. So invite your friends, share our page.
Yeah, we're still in the process of figuring out exactly what we want that to look like, mm-hmm. but you know, share away. We're gonna get there. We're trying to expand. We want to, you know, show our gratitude to you guys for sticking with us and joining us each week and all of your comments. Like, we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate the birthday wishes.
Oh yeah. Like my Ted Bundy thing there. I thought it was hilarious.
I did. I appreciated that. So thank you all. And until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.